Hi guys, I am Lauren, and I'm struggling with this hat and this mic. All right. I can still see. Yeah, we're good. Okay, is that better?
Oh, that's working. Someone screwed it up.
All right. Okay. Welcome. Yeah, good job for Daniel. Woohoo. He's really nervous about reading that long scripture. So I am a therapist, like Joy and Marquette have already said, and I just want to start out by saying that when you do my job for over a decade, you really learn a lot of things about people. You kind of learn a lot of their isms and the things that really shift people a lot. And I just want to set this record straight now. Full moons are definitely a thing. Like, they're a real thing. Anybody that's worked in mental health will tell you that. Another big one is when the seasons change. The last one is what we're here to talk about, is the holidays. And let me just say, people really love therapy during the holidays. These times are supposed to be the most joyous times of the year. We see all the commercials and the happy families and memories and connections. We're just so lucky we have all this love and peace and joy and all these great things abounding in our lives during this time. But trust me, no one's coming to see me because their holiday looks like a Hallmark Christmas movie. All right. In fact, most people are coming in because it's the emotional equivalent of a 1980s slasher film. The holidays really do funny things to people. One thing I notice is that we all look to January 1 of the next year to solve all of our problems. It's like we just expect to wake up and we're going to be different and everybody around us is just going to be different. But turns out we usually stay so overwhelmed that we often don't stop and see how the weeks before this year is finally over have pushed us in the opposite directions of our goals and our resolutions. So why aren't these the most wonderful times of the year? People aren't struggling because the holidays are just inherently bad days. In fact, it's quite the opposite. These days have value and meaning. We're celebrating something important to us. But people are struggling with people problems. They just don't know what to do with person X or group Y. You may think that all the fear that gets produced from just having to interact with people, that we're also living in like a purge movie. Maybe, and I'll like admit it, like maybe I just like interact with like really special people and I see really special people and I'm just really one of those special people that has this life. But from what I gather, and again, I'll admit it if I'm wrong, most of us are not walking around physically trying to assault everybody we see. If we were, we probably wouldn't have any friends. But we do actually end up hurting, controlling, debasing, dehumanizing people around us all the time. And we do it with the most dangerous weapon of all, our tongues. Sadly, this kind of hurt is common and more often encouraged and praised. Now it's time for you to meet my friend Jane. Jane works in an office. On lunch breaks, everyone gathers around to share in the latest office drama. And today's topic, it's Betty. As Jane is preparing her meal, she overhears their coworkers calling Betty some names. Betty's lazy and dramatic and just being one of those privileged people at work. Because when she shows up, she's not showing up really often, but when she does, she's crying at her desk and just generally being snippy and terrible to everyone around her. Well, Jane, overhearing this, immediately gets bristled. You know that feeling where you're like frozen? Okay, so that's happening to her. And she's also wishing that the floor would open up and actively swallow her whole. Because you see, no one in the break room knows that Jane and Betty are friends. In fact, no one knows that Betty has been having a really hard time at work. She's been having to file a lot of complaints with HR based on discrimination. They don't know that Jane has been Betty's one and only confidant at work. And Jane knows Betty's really been through the ringer. Jane's in a pickle. What are some things she could do? Well, she can keep these words that others are saying about Betty to herself. She can try to share Betty's information just so these people can really understand what Betty's going through. She could start calling her coworkers' names. She could go run and tell Betty everything everybody's saying about her. But you see, all these actions have consequences. So we're going to go through some of those. So, if she's found out as Betty's friend, she could be left out of that coworker group. But that's bad. She's just gotten comfortable with those people. And she's seen how they talk and treat others that are not in the group. With one whiff, she's not with them. She could find herself just like Betty, being gossiped about, analyzed, and picked apart by everyone around the work table. On the other side, if Jane shares Betty's information, that could be bad. If she doesn't stand up for Betty, that could be bad. If she does tell Betty what happened, that could be bad. Not telling Betty, also bad. Ultimately, Jane runs this potential of losing Betty, the co-workers, or both. Jane is what I would like to call having an existential crisis. There's no conclusion to Jane's story today. Instead, I just want to give you a moment to think of what you would hope would happen. If you were Jane, what would you do? How would you feel right now if you were Betty? What would you need and want the most? How would you feel if you were one of those coworkers? A big issue with the world we live in is that we can all just be so activated and reactive. We often forget that we actually play all the roles in this story. We have all been Betty, we have all been the coworkers, and we have all been Jane. We have been gossiped about and mischaracterized and misunderstood. We have been the ones doing those same mischaracterizations and gossiping. We have felt so impossibly caught in some complicated situation that we feel stuck in that metaphorical rock and hard place. The thing about the situation, though, is everybody is losing. All these things are happening, and yet Jane, Betty, and the coworkers are no better for them. In fact, if anything, contempt, fear, anxiety, shame, and guilt are spreading through this workplace. Using the life of Jane, I want to highlight a big issue that we all have. It's kind of a big one, too. It's the condition of being human. Jane, while in the break room, she's actively trying not to die. Because Jane's brain is totally in survival mode. Despite us living in this modern world with communications and communities at our fingertips, our brains, when under stress, are stuck back in what I like to call the tribal times, where we had to hunt, gather, and stay in groups to stay alive. You see, though, the thing about putting groups of people together is that our natural tendency isn't actually towards kumbaya. Fun fact. Not so fun fact. Because it's actually to dissolve into chaos. There's actually, and I didn't put this in there, but there's actually this thing in group therapy. There's different phases when you're trying to get people together. And one is literally called storming. Because you're just expecting everybody to hate each other. But our tendency towards chaos is because that we're all just really trying to survive. Not being part of a group goes against every survival instinct we have. In tribal times, we need a group for protection, connection, and resources. However, if you were the person taking all the resources and causing mayhem and destruction and being a threat to your tribe, you best bet you're going to get kicked out. Forced to hunt and survive alone. Some of you may be thinking right now, that alone existence sounds awesome. This isn't some superhero movie where you're on this like deep diving scholarly journey into the existential nature of our minds. To be blunt, if you're out of the group in tribal times, you're probably going to die. ancestors weren't the ones being that lone wolf left to survive. Those guys and gals probably got eaten by the wolf. Our ancestors were the ones that did really good in tribes. They provided the resources or worked the resources. And those things carried down to us. So, if our current nature is to survive in groups, that also means our nature is also to ostracize what we label as other or different. Where does this get us in trouble today? We could turn on our TVs or look at our phones right now and see it. People are divided by the groups they consider themselves a part of. This tendency is quite blatant and encouraged in society. Yet, when we're part of a group, it's easy to adopt attitudes and beliefs about the other side that don't necessarily label or believe or understand or support or encourage your group's mentalities. The other side is quick to become the enemy. Holidays, they seem to bring up group associations, sports teams, political positions, all the way down to how people cook a turkey. Often people in the same family or friend group are also parts of opposing groups. Does this survival mentality shed some light around the stress we experience during the holidays? From a survival perspective, yes, we are safer in a group. And for us to maintain our standing, we must be able to get, process, and understand information about our environment and our group. We need to know if we are about to get kicked out of the tribe. We need to know also who's on the verge of getting kicked out so we can prepare and hopefully not make their same mistakes. Are we about to be attacked by another tribe? Are we getting ready to do the attacking? Oh, what does that word mean? What happens to that person when somebody calls them that? We learn our status, what to do, what not to do, and how to interact favorably based on group dynamics. But what happens when we have to choose between two groups or what we learn? What happens when we have to choose between two groups or we learn that we could be, thank you, Wind, we could be kicked out or lose our resources and belonging that the group provides? Simply put, we will do whatever gives us the best chance of survival. And it looks a lot like this. We self-protect when we feel threatened, insecure, or unsure. When we stop and see how we move through life, we're often just living in survival mode. Gossiping, reacting, agreeing, disagreeing, dismissing, all these things we do to each other are just functions of our brains keeping us safe. And we're doing a really great job of it because we're all sitting here alive. We are survivalists, and as survivalists, we do what it takes to live, regardless of the fallout. Kind of makes us stop for a second and have some compassion for ourselves. It's exhausting to feel like everything around you is trying to kill you. Makes a lot of those not say so great words and actions that we have done make a little bit of sense. Daniel and I have this phrase that is a joke. We use it when one of us is kind of being a little ridiculous, or we see another human just doing something also ridiculous, and we say, "Hurt people, hurt people." I want to venture to say, all of us have, will be, or are currently hurting. In our humanity, we're constantly learning what keeps us in and out of a group, how to stay alive, how to avoid being alone and isolated. We really learn our communications and survival do go hand in hand. And I just want to tell you right now, out of all the big, bad, and mean, scary things that others have done to us that have made us feel like we are nothing, it wouldn't have made us feel that way if we didn't think it was true. We'd just blow it off and dismiss it as crazy talk. We have learned today that we do hurt intentionally, but most often it's not that. It's more intentional because we are unintentional because we are just trying to save our own skins. But if we believed beyond a shadow of a doubt that we were safe and just inherently deserved belonging, we wouldn't need to be survivalists. In fact, we would go from actively trying not to die to living. People wouldn't be a threat because we would know they are just surviving, doing the best they can, all because that person feels they are unsafe, unworthy, and alone. You see, what we are growing in the deepest parts of us will produce a fruit. We can call the seed inside us whatever we want, but in the end, what it really is will be made known by what we produce, how we talk, and how we act. If seeds that were growing inside of us show us that we have no inherent value and that the only way we matter is because we're in a group, well, we'll plant those survival seeds and start producing a survival person's fruit, acting and reacting just to stay alive. We let those words and names and mischaracterizations by the others grow inside of us, and then we keep feeding them. Survival mode is a really vicious cycle. We will hurt because we feel unsafe, because we are also hurting. But the thing is, others can pick up that hurt that we cause them and carry it as evidence that they also are unworthy. That has a consequence for us. And usually that consequence of hurting someone further proves our point that we don't deserve belonging. This is complicated, especially if you consider yourself a Christ follower. As Christians, we're called to love our neighbors as ourselves. But if you don't value and love you, the very you who's made in God's image, loving your neighbor as yourself starts to look a lot like hating your neighbor as yourself. But if our seeds that we plant are safe, when we tell ourselves that we have value and belonging, we begin to plant life seeds, eager to show the world that there is more to life than just surviving. If you don't know how to start, I would tell you look to God, because He's a pretty good gardener. Then look to other people who produce calm. When we begin to see life through God's eyes, we begin to produce a fruit, a good fruit and a wise fruit. That fruit more often looks more like keeping our mouth shut and going against the grain, which is the opposite of surviving in our human state. In Christ, we live and thrive. In the world, we're just surviving in the places that the world deems as safe and good. But those places can shift and morph and lead us running from group to group and place to place. But if we just stop and accept the seeds of life God has for us, we won't have to move again. We have a home. We have a group. We actually have life in abundance. God gave us survival for the world's acceptance, but He gives us life abundant when we see we're already accepted by Him. The last few verses of James chapter 3 points us in that direction. James writes, "But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness." So, as we go into this holiday season, you will be interacting with people. These people may have or will hurt you. But remember, hurt people hurt people. The person doing the hurting is hurting inside. And we get really good at burying and distracting from our own pain. Maybe if you use this lens of survival mode to look at another person's interactions with you, you can find compassion. You can choose what you do with other people's words and actions also. Ask yourself, does this person's actions and or my belief about this person and their actions bring peace to me? Or does it take peace from me? Do I feel alive and fully myself after this interaction? Or do I feel very lost and confused about who and what I am? I tell my clients all the time to chase after peace and calm, because those are really good fruits to eat. For a last note, remember whose you are. And if you're unsure, know that just because you're sitting here today, you have inherent value, and you are worthy of belonging. Pray with me.